So a warm welcome to everyone. I'd like to actually start out doing a little bit of practice to make what I have to say tonight less abstract. We'll do maybe 5 minutes or so. I know some of you have been sitting already, but we're going to do it some more. Find a comfortable position. Your eyes can either be open or gazing down the floor. And let the awareness come down into the body. And explore without some preconceived idea. What it's like to have a body. And so you might scan through the body and notice that there's a sense of ease or tension, particularly the eyes and lips. And anywhere that you have some tension, sometimes simply paying attention to it allows that tension to release. So being aware of the entire body, you might notice the rhythm of the breathing happening all on its own. Perhaps the muscles that move the breath, the breathing process, the diaphragm pushing down from the chest, making room for air to flow in. And then collapsing, relaxing. Just let the out-breath be as complete as possible. This could happen by allowing the belly to drop in the lap or letting the diaphragm relax completely. And perhaps you can sense the energetic level of the body. How on the in-breath the energy increases. And on the out-breath there's a dropping down, a relaxation. And one practice that is really helpful to take on is to explore qualities of the body. What are words like tone, temperature, tightness, firmness, softness? Not this evening, but really a way to be more connected, to step out of the conceptual perception of what the body is. And then notice whether there are any pleasant or unpleasant feelings, sense feelings. So these are the five senses. The one that's probably predominant now is a sense of touch. And simply noticing pleasant, unpleasant, neither, changing. And then opening up to the sense of whether thoughts and emotions have a pleasant or unpleasant feeling tone associated with them. And then noticing any thoughts that might be occurring and how they simply arise all on their own and they pass away. And now simply reflecting that every one of us here, as a result of causes and conditions, we couldn't be any other way. Every one of us, perfect, we couldn't be any other way. And with that reflection, this bringing a wish of, may I be well, may I be at ease. Whatever the mind, the body is doing, it's a learned experience. And how does the reflection, may I be well, affect your felt sense? Pleasant, unpleasant, not much effect. And then when you're ready, open your eyes and just look around and explore how the sense of what you perceive affects your felt sense, affects your body. I just wish for everyone in here to be well. And exploring again how that affects things. Okay, so here we go. About a week ago, someone was scheduled to give a talk this evening and they canceled out, so I tend to be the pinch hitter around here. And I was asked if I'd give a talk, and I just finished teaching a course on the Satipatthana Sutta. Suttas means discourse. This spring, and about to teach another class starting in October on the same discourse. So when I was asked to offer a talk, what came to mind was a book by a German monk named Analio. And he wrote a thesis on this discourse, the Satipatthana Sutta. And the title of the thesis was the Satipatthana Sutta, A Direct Path to Awakening. And so the title came from the title of my talk came from the subtitle of his book, A Direct Path to Awakening. Well, actually, I'm sorry, it wasn't a direct path. It was the direct path to awakening. And I put the question mark there because, in part, it seemed to me like there are a lot of ways to become awakened. And so I sort of wondered about the translation, the way. And then also, what does realization mean? And how does that affect your practice? Or what are your aspirations here? It's really something to explore. I mean, perhaps some people are here simply for stress reduction. And how does that affect how you practice? This is a topic that's particularly hot to me right now because a friend of mine in England was just given three talks, which took about 4 hours, exploring this question about what awakening is, what teachings are. It's really quite an interesting question, rather than just taking what we're presented here as truth. Are there different ways to look at things that perhaps are more freeing? So the Satipatthana usually translated as foundations of mindfulness. Joseph Goldstein likes another translation, way of establishing mindfulness. And so by way, he's talking about the process of being aware. And in this discourse on mindfulness, there are four ways of establishing mindfulness. And we actually explore three of them in a guided meditation. So the first one is mindfulness of the body. And it's so important. I mean, it's essential to this practice. It's an embodied practice. It's our ground. It's the place where we discharge emotions. And if we're not grounded in the body, the mind doesn't know what to do but spin. So if you walk out of here having nothing else in mind, make that a focus. Not just in sitting, but in your daily life. How is my body right now? And when the body is at ease, the mind tends to be at ease. Okay? The second foundation, when I ask you to explore what is the felt sense, this is simply whether things are pleasant, unpleasant, or don't have a lot of charge to it. So that can refer to sense experiences, or it can refer to emotions. And these can be felt briefly in terms of the thought process, in terms of the body. So we did a class this spring on this felt sense, which is usually translated as feeling tone or hedonic tone, I think is a term that is getting used in psychology, degree of pleasantness or unpleasant or not. And it's such a powerful force. Just think about how much you move around, do things, to try and get pleasant ones and get rid of the unpleasant ones. Have you ever succeeded in getting completely pleasant? Because if you are, just come up here and give the talk. It just can't be done. And it was interesting class. I mean, I remember one person just said, this was an eye-opening experience. And I, you know, it's not just for other people. I mean, I really pay attention to it. Maybe I have a cup of coffee because just really wiped, you know. Tonight I go to bed at 9, so this is late for me, right? So, or get something to eat, you find yourself a refrigerator, and how did you get here? So that's a really area of exploration. The third establishment of mindfulness is this Pali word citta, which usually gets translated as mind. I like the word mind-heart because it includes both thoughts and emotions. It has some really rather kind of spectacular translations, I guess, in a way. Some maybe what we might call spiritual translation as well. Ajahn Suchito gave a talk here, I guess about a month ago, is that right? Maybe a month and a half, called Include It All. And he talked about citta as, somewhat hesitantly, he used the word spirit. It's something that, we'll explore what it is, but it's something that's simply there, that guides our way of being in this world. Other translations are awareness, and language is tricky because awareness gets used in different ways. The way that it's getting referred to in terms of citta is this is simply this receptive quality that we have. just to be able to open to what is. It differs from attention because attention focuses, narrows things. Awareness doesn't have any boundaries. Another translation is consciousness. But in Buddhism, consciousness is something, there's two kinds of consciousness that gets talked about. One is the simple knowing that occurs every moment. You know, I hit the bell, and there's consciousness arises knowing, hearing sound. But there's another kind of consciousness that doesn't land anywhere. Now, I don't know, just try and imagine that. You know, there's a famous metaphor where the Buddha says, you know, suppose there's a house with four windows and the sun rises in the east. Where does the sun hit? And people answer, on the west wall. And he says, well, suppose there's no wall. And he says, well, then the monks, they have to answer, on the ground. And he says, suppose there's no ground. Where does it land? That's the kind of consciousness we're talking about. So I'll say a little bit about this word mindful. It's a translation of a Pali word called sati. And there's another word, samasati, which means kind of wise or right mindfulness. That's what we're supposed to be practicing. And you know, it came from the Victorian era. There's a black lesbian Zen master who said, mindfulness, ugh. It comes in the same translations as words like appreciative joy, etc. It makes one think that practice is being up in the mind, observing things. But when we go through these first three establishments of mindfulness, we're really directly knowing the body. We're directly knowing the felt sense. So some people said maybe we should call it heartfulness, or maybe we should call it bodyfulness, or really perhaps we should have all three. This is our practice, to be aware of all these three and how they affect each other. Now, the fourth establishment of mindfulness, which I'm not going to talk about unless it comes up in the Q&A. This discourse is really important. If you think about how much the word mindfulness gets used, and here's a discourse that talks about establishing mindfulness. It's about a 10-page discourse. Bhikkhu Anālayo the book I just mentioned was a thesis he wrote on that particular discourse. It's about that thick. Okay. And then Joseph Goldstein, really playing off of Bhikkhu Anālayo's book and his own teaching, gave about, 30 talks over a period of 2.5 years on a discourse. If you're interested, they're on the dharmaseed.org. Look up Satipatthana and Joseph and you'll find them. So what I want to do tonight is really talk about mindfulness of citta. And I start by reading the instructions, because it says something about how we're supposed to be practicing. So it goes like this. And how does one remain focused on the mind in of itself? Which, to me, right away raises an interesting question. If it's your mind, how can you watch it? What is watching the mind? Okay, so there's a case where one, when the mind has lust, discerns that the mind has lust. When the mind is without lust, he discerns that the mind is without lust. When the mind has aversion, he discerns that the mind has aversion. When the mind is without aversion, he discerns that the mind is without aversion. When the mind has delusion, he discerns the mind is without delusion. When the mind is concentrated, he discerns the mind is concentrated. When it's not concentrated, he discerns that it's not concentrated. So these first three things that we're supposed to discern, to observe, these are translations of Pali words that are very wide-ranging. So when you discern whether the mind has lust or not, lust is sometimes it translates passion, greed, any for it could be just some subtle form of wanting things to be pleasant or something. So it's a full range of experience he's looking at. It's this kind of leaning into things, wanting things to be a particular way. And aversion can be translated anything from rage, hatred, ill will, or just a slight, oh, this my knee hurts, or I have some unpleasant sensation. And they have the characteristic of, in the case of lust, it's like trying to get something, trying to get somewhere. And in a case of aversion, we're pushing away. And then delusion is a little bit tricky, but you could say, well, the mind's confused, lost, spinning. Or one way to look at delusion is a sense of a self, separate from the experience. So when Bob mentioned that Doug Phillips is giving a 4-week course on impermanence and not self, what he's in part talking about in that course is the sense that there's someone separate from the experience. Okay. So let me bring that kind of that not self thing back to this question of what awakening is a little bit. In the discourse, awakening is described as freedom from sorrow, lamentation, or grief, freedom from sickness, all these things that we all go through. Freedom from the fact that no matter how much we try and arrange things, the things change. And a pretty reasonable question is, well, how can that possibly be? Because we all have these things. So usually this word, Pali word dukkha, is translated suffering, stress, dissatisfaction. But it's a very subtle term. And another translation is the sense of someone outside experience. It's a sense that someone owns this body, the sense that someone has an unpleasant experience. That's what the Buddha is talking about when he talks about the end of suffering, stress, and dissatisfaction. And what's interesting about this discourse here is that when we're trying to get some experience or get rid of some experience, or there's some sense of self, we're separating ourselves from the experience. Make sense? Yeah. You might really notice this in your daily life when you really can't stand the way you feel, how strong the sense of identity is. Or when you really just, I don't know, lust, have passion for something, how strong the sense of yourself is. So what this discourse is saying, it's not telling you to do anything about this. It's just saying, okay, the mind is like this. The mind has lust. How's it? And then what you might do, if you're bringing this kind of holistic awareness, notice how that feels. And when the mind doesn't have lust or greed, I like greed's a little bit for me better, but how does that feel? So in daily life practice, that, you know, in addition to sitting, it can be simply if you perform an act of generosity. It could be really listening to someone carefully, or opening a door for them, or simple things like letting someone out of traffic, noticing how that feels. The same thing is true about hatred, ill will, aversion. Notice how it feels when you have aversion. If you notice the body, it's contracted, and the mind contracts around it. It becomes the whole thing. And when it's there is an aversion, not ill will. So when we did this little exercise at the beginning of the talk about just realizing everyone's result of causes and conditions and wishing them well, hopefully that brings a sense of well-being. There are two things that in this in the Buddhist teaching in this tradition that are seen as axiomatic truth. They're really, these are fundamental truths. And one is developing skillful, doing what is skillful and letting go of what's unskillful. Okay, so skillful is would include things that is some sort of felt sense. What brings a sense of uplift, of spaciousness, of buoyancy? And unskillful things, what brings a sense of contractedness, separation, sense of depression? So these are things to explore for yourself. When these qualities of mind are here or there or not there, what's it like? So that's a practice to take on, noticing that, particularly in daily life, I think. So then the Buddha goes on to mention, eight different mind states and their absence. And when you think about there are all these gradations, he's really saying, be aware of all this, every state of mind. So in this discourse, there's what is referred to as a refrain. It occurs 13 times in a discourse. After every one of these teachings, after the body, after feeling tone, after awareness of citta, and then all these other categories are in the fourth foundation. So here's the instructions that occur. Now remember, this applies to body, felt sense, mind. In this way, one remains focused internally on the mind in of itself, or externally on the mind in of itself, or both internally and externally on the mind in of itself. So now he's asking you not just to be aware of your mind, but to be aware of other minds, not to be aware just of your body, but to be aware of other bodies. So Dan Siegel is going to be here towards the end of the month giving a little, I don't know what label we call it, workshop or something, and he calls that attunement, like being aware of the other person, what's your perception of them, and how that affects you. So this is really a relational practice. Okay, or one remains focused on the one remains focused on the phenomena of origination with regard to the mind, on the phenomena of passing away with regard to the mind, or the phenomena of origination and passing away with regard to the mind. And that's, again, the other part of Doug Phillips' four-week class, impermanence. Body experiences come and go, felt sense of pleasant, unpleasant come and go, and thoughts, emotions come and go. So what's interesting about these three particular establishments of mindfulness is that we're not supposed to do anything but observe. And to notice that they're impermanent, to notice what their qualities are, that's it. Now, other parts of practice are cultivation things, but and actually in the fourth establishment of mindfulness, there are things that we do. For example, if we are totally lost, then there are hindrances, and so we have a way of trying to work with the fact that we're so lost in hatred we can't even observe it, for example. So what's the logic behind that? Well, for one thing, if you keep trying to fix things, you can't really come to an understanding of it. It's one part of the mind reacting to another part of the mind. And you can really see what's skillful and unskillful. And I actually don't like the word. You can actually know what's skillful and unskillful. It includes the bodily sense of things. And from perspective, a lot of work has been going on in therapy. A lot of our patterns, a lot of our difficulties are locked in the body. And so in order to be, to let them free, we need to open up to them. And maybe we can talk about this some in the Q&A, but that can be very, very difficult. So the question is, when we have unpleasant experiences, physical, emotional, or mental, can we allow them to be there without getting lost in them? Okay. Now, Ajahn Chah, a teacher I really like, talks about widening and softening. Okay. Widening in the sense of widening detention. Joseph Goldstein has a phrase I really like, and the sky is blue. You know, we get all lost in our story, and all this stuff is going on. We're like this little blip from perspective of the cosmos. In terms of the body, we can find parts of the body that feel okay. You know, I always say my toes, they just don't get emotional except when I stub them, you know. So we can choose where we put our attention, find parts that feel okay. Probably going to run way over on this. Okay. And another reason for looking at internal, external is we see that the mind's not independent. We're interconnected. What's going on in someone else's mind, body, when we're in a relationship affects us. And so to be aware of that. So why watch all this impermanence? Why ask the question, what's observing all this? In part, the reason is develop a sense of dispassion. That you really see all this stuff is changing, doesn't belong to anybody, it's just conditions flowing. I remember I spent a couple of months just watching Impermanence with Joseph Goldstein some time ago. And I went to this room I used to sneak off to that few people know about. And I have my cup of tea. And it just was really so good. And I thought, oh, this is so ephemeral. And then I'd have a meal. And sometimes it's really good food. And I thought, oh, I just have a little bit more. But, you know, it didn't last very long. Or if I chose not to have it, the wanting didn't last very long either. So dispassionate doesn't mean that you don't care or you're indifferent or apathetic. It's a quality of openness, of equanimity, of really being open to things rather than grabbing onto them. So that leads me to the last part of this discourse, this refrain. One is mindful that there is a mind is maintained to the extent of knowledge. I'm sorry, I'll try this again. One is mindful that there is a mind is maintained to the extent of knowledge and remembrance. So one quality of sati is to remember. Okay. So mindfulness is to remember, to keep in mind something. So if you're trying to be aware of the breath, the sati keeps saying, come back to that. Or if you're working with one of these established mindfulness, sati keeps saying, come back to this. Come back to how the body feels. Come back to what the feeling tone is. Come back to what the thoughts and emotions are. And then remembrance is, again, the sati has this term of remembering what the experience was, to bring that into your life, what you've learned from that. And then it goes on and says, and one remains independent, not clinging to anything in the world. So what does that mean? The world is our personal experience, thoughts, emotions, knowing, bodily senses, all these things that we kind of think of as us. Not clinging, not grabbing onto, not holding to. Because when you're grabbing, clinging could include either pushing away or trying to get somewhere. Because the clinging creates a sense of separation. So this comes back again a little bit to the question of what are we talking about realization? And more and more, I've been hearing this Well, there's a line from the Buddha says, when one is not clinging, the mind is at ease. One has personally attained nibbana. So a moment of not clinging, not holding to anything, is realization, a momentary realization. So Joseph Goldstein quotes a Tibetan teacher who said, brief moments many times. And that's worth paying attention to. Just notice what your experience, notice what experience is like when you're not grabbing something or pushing it away. And actually, often we hear this expression, let go. And Ajahn Sumedho, who's a Thai forest master who died, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, said, if you let go a little bit, you have a little peace. Let go a lot, you have a lot of peace. Let go completely, you have complete peace. But monks know this, but 90% of the time they can't. Because you don't hold on. Holding on is a kind of a reflex, a psychological reflex to be something solid. And so, in part, just discourse is kind of developing a way to develop some dispassion so that the clinging melts away from cause and conditions, rather than the sense of self actually gets created by the clinging. Make any sense to people? Okay. So that's the conventional presentation of this discourse. Simply observe, see the impermanence nature thing, the felt sense of things, let them arise and pass away. That's the practice. But there's another interpretation that Rodney Smith talks about, and you sort of wonder if Rodney Smith and Analio and Joseph Goldstein are even talking about the same discourse. It's such a different interpretation. So I want to talk about Rodney's approach a little bit. Going to have to be a little bit, okay. So the discourse is saying observe. Don't do anything at all about it. Simply observe what's happening. So what is he doing? He's taking all the willfulness and struggle out of the experience. It's like this. You don't try and fix it. Simply let awareness be there and observe it. So what holds the mind when you're not doing anything to it? Awareness is simply there. There's no, I mean, just for a moment. Just notice how you automatically know, or knowing automatically happens. And where is it? There's awareness of perhaps how your toes feel, how your knees feel. There's awareness of thoughts and emotions. There's awareness of space around. It's automatically there. And if there's a sense that you are the person being aware, the sense of witness, then notice awareness can be aware of the witness. So can you be something that's being observed? So this is a real sense of wholeness. It's really, in some sense, it's available right now. Freedom is available right now. Simply this quality of awareness is simply there, not struggling to make anything any different. I stopped by the office this evening before the talk, and one of the staff asked me how I'm doing. I said, everything's perfect. It couldn't be any other way. That's the sense. Rather than trying to adjust the world to meet our needs, could we open to the world the way it is? Not to struggle with it. This doesn't mean we don't do anything, but we move in a different way. Okay. So realize he's including every mind state in a discourse, including the arising of the sense of I. Be aware of all those. So where is the sense of I? It's in the mind. It's a thought belief. Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. Well, I think he's a little bit deluded. He believed a thought is what he was. But how long does that thought stay? So the sense of self is a mental experience believed. And this impacts all our practice. Because if you're outside the mind, you can control it. But if the sense of you is just a mental experience, what can you do about it? It's one part of mind fighting another part of mind. One part of mind says, I'm really inadequate. I should try harder. And another part of mind reacts to it. And the more we fighting one part of the mind with the other part of the mind, we're just reinforcing them. Eckhart Tolle, in terms of ways to become awakened, one night just felt, I can't stand myself. And then he asked the question, are there two of me? And apparently he was ripe. He sat on a park bench for a couple of years in a state of bliss. If that seems logical, why don't we do that? I think because we'd rather believe we're outside the mind so we can control it. It really puts us back a little bit to see that this whole sense of identity, who we are, is some mental experience believed. But just a way to check this, just sit down sometime and try and control the mind. Try and make it do what you want to. Why can't you stay with the breath the whole time you sit here if that's what you're trying to do? You can't. And the more you try, the stronger a sense of self gets to be. So the implications of this, in terms of practice, is that trying to resist, trying to change things, creates some sense of separation and suffering. And so what do we do about it? Well, one option, and I got to buzz through this a little bit, is to just drop all judgment resistance. I shouldn't say just. Dropping resistance and judgment is not easy. But letting go of these mental experiences. So if you do see you're judging yourself or other people or you're resisting some experience, then look at the thought and can you recognize it's a thought believed? This is a good question to ask yourself. When you have a thought, do you believe it? Why do you believe it? So much of the teaching in the Buddhist tradition is simply to relax, allow, and observe what's going on, because it's taking the struggle away. It's creating a sense of self that's going to get somewhere. Rodney Smith had this view of practice that was going to take lifetimes to become awakened. And he practiced this man, Nisargadatta Maharaj, who was in the Advaita tradition, and he asked him, are you really ready to join me in the Absolute? And Rodney said, well, how do you do that? And Nisargadatta Maharaj says, well, I see you're not ready. Because it's instant. You don't do it. It's just what happens when the mind isn't trying to do anything. So that's one practice, is just to relax, allow, observe, so that all the unconscious resistance become conscious. And the body has homeostasis. It will release all the causes of suffering if you can find a way, develop a skill to be with the experience and not lost in it. Okay. The other way is to see what you believe is outside the mind. And I'm sure I already talked about this a little. Be aware of the thought that you think is outside the mind. I should be like this. Isn't that a mental experience believed? Somebody else should be like that. That's a mental experience believed. So there's this quality of awareness that's fine with whatever's going on. It's the greatest form of love you'll ever know. It's perfectly fine with you exactly as it is. This sense of presence. of opening to things without any attempt to make anything happen. So I could say a lot about this, but we're kind of running out of time, so I think I'll just try and bring us to close a little bit. One point is that we need to take time out of the picture. We need to stop believing that if I keep doing all this, I'll get somewhere. That right now, this very moment, if we open to things the way they are, there's freedom available, a sense of balance, a sense of ease. Now, for most of us, we're so conditioned, there's so much unconscious resistance that we're given techniques. And that's not to reject them at all. It really is helpful to cultivate skillful mind states. So when we're talking about the establishment of mindfulness of feeling tone, that refers to sense experiences and mental experiences, mental emotional experiences. And one way to work with that felt sense is we don't have ultimate control on anything, but we can have a little control over mental experiences. We can form the intention to be kind. We can form the intention to be compassionate. Not because we believe we should be that way, but because if we really open up to what the experience is like, it's simply more pleasant. It's a skillful response. So these techniques of developing calm that Chaz is going to talk about, being in the body, to cultivate skillful states and to open up and let unskillful states be released is something we all have to do for a while. But I think it's really helpful to know what the end game is here. The end game is to stop all this doing and trying to get somewhere. And maybe just moment to moment, notice those times when that's there and what the experience is like. And the more one pays attention to that, the more one will be inclined to go there. Okay. So I want to just read this one little quote from Ajahn Chah, which I particularly like, and I'll close with that. It's from a book called A Taste of Freedom. He says, about this mind, in truth, there is nothing really wrong with it. It is intrinsically pure. Within itself, it's already peaceful. The real mind doesn't have anything to it. It is simply an aspect of nature. It becomes peaceful or agitated because moods deceive it. The untrained mind is stupid. He doesn't miss words. Sense impressions come and trick it into happiness, suffering, gladness, and sorrow. But the mind's true nature is none of these things. The gladness or sadness is not the mind, but only the mood coming to deceive us. The untrained mind gets lost and follows these things. It forgets itself. Then we think that it's we who are upset or ease or whatever. So he's talking about if we identify these things as what we are, the inherent peacefulness that the mind actually has gets lost. We don't see it. But really, this mind of ours is already unmoving and peaceful, really peaceful. Just like the leaf who is still as long as there's no wind blows. If a wind comes up, the leaf flutters. The fluttering is due to the wind. The fluttering is due to those sense impressions the mind follows. If it doesn't follow them, it doesn't flutter. If we know fully the true nature of sense impressions, we will be unmoved. Our practice is simply to see the original mind. So we must train the mind to know these sense impressions and not get lost in them, to make it peaceful. And just this is the aim of this difficult practice we put ourselves through. Okay, so I'm going to stop there and just open it up for questions. And it doesn't have to be at all related to what I've talked about this evening. Anything to do with suffering, stress, dissatisfaction, peace is open game.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.